Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the October 23 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined today by Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. In Chicago, we're joined by Ted Seifert. He's with Zahner Ag Hedge. And we're also joined today from Morton, Illinois, by Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. Let's turn our attention to exactly what we'll talk about today. I think, Ellen, we'll start with you. What kinds of items are on your mind?
I sure would like to talk about basis because it flashed a bullish signal 2 weeks ago. And then the spread started narrowing to another, today on Thursday, upside breakouts in both corn and beans.
Naomi Bloom at Total Farm Marketing on your list.
Yeah, let's build with what Ellen was talking about. In addition to funds buying back short positions, of course, we can't see the weekly view of it, but we can get a daily snapshot. And I just feel like with the cheap value that we have for these grain markets and the strong export inspections that we saw this week, I think there's a lot of grain moving and that demand is fantastic.
And finally, Ted Seifert.
Yeah, certainly seen some strength in basis, which is interesting when you're, moving along through harvest. Generally speaking, that means that maybe crops weren't quite as big as expected, or that demand is stronger than expected. Although in the case of soybeans, that'd be a tough argument to make, I believe. And then, speaking of soybean demand, there were talks that maybe China was in there buying some today. And it was a very specific number, over 1 million metric tons. And with the specific, how specific that number was, I don't know, maybe sounds like that is the case. The problem with that is, I don't know how we'll know for sure with the lack of any government reporting on export sales.
So let's take up the basis part first. Ellen Dearden of Ag Review, talk to me about these bullish trends in the corn market as it's related to basis and the spreads.
Well, on the basis side of things, our basis in central Illinois, let's talk corn right now, has gone from about 35 under to about 25 under. And I would say in my neighborhood around Peoria that the corn harvest is 95% complete. On the bean side of things, we're looking at basis that is, had been at the widest probably 45 under and is now 25 or 30 under. And interestingly, the river bids are good and the processor bids are even better. So we're seeing a real move in basis in areas where harvest is really winding down rapidly. That may not be the case when you look at areas that have a lot to harvest yet.
Well, I'm wondering about the demand side of this. What's the pull in the marketplace in our area, in Illinois? Why do you suppose basis is at this point really narrowing up?
Well, we're seeing these processor margins really good, and especially on the bean side of things. Bean harvest kind of wrapped up early, and people probably sold the first bushels across the scales and took the rest and put those at home. So beans aren't going to move here other than seeing commercially owned beans that'll go be moving on this bump up in basis. But on the corn side of things, I think we're seeing the river bids have improved, and we, despite the fact that we've got low water and some barge restrictions, we still see these river bids strong on corn. So they have to vie from the ethanol demand for corn as well. Again, we're not seeing a big flush of farmer selling in the corn side of things either. I think home storage was empty to start out the year, and so there was plenty of bin space on farm to hit this crop. I put the crop right back in the bin.
So, Ted Seifert, the futures market sometimes, particularly during the middle of a government shutdown when there are not USDA reports released, has difficulty especially during this time frame. And really the only other time that we have a good experience was during the first Trump administration, 35 days during the fall, finding a path through the market. And basis is where they turn. I'm wondering how you see this basis, particularly for corn, soybeans too, as it divides east and west across the Corn Belt.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, the river is the main thing that determines that for corn, because the corn demand, or the big bright spot in corn demand right now, is certainly export demand. And so, you know, when you look at the far western reaches of the Corn Belt, it's, you know, maybe not quite as strong there. You also have, I'm going to say, better yields out that way, too. I think the big surprise that was coming in Illinois is part of the reason why you're seeing that basis kind of come back in a little bit better or earlier than expected. And so, yeah, I mean, look, corn demand is good. Yes, there was a lot of corn acres this year. Yes, there, I'm going to still say it is a pretty decent yield, even though probably well off of what the USDA's expectations were. We're going to have to wait a while to find out what their current expectations are. But with corn demand being good, you've got a lot of competing demand points between ethanol plants and, you know, the river and export that is keeping that fairly strong.
Did you say big surprise in Illinois? And if that's the case, what was it?
You know, I think Illinois is coming in well below what the last look at we had for the USDA's yields. Yeah, again, that was in September. You know, a lot may have changed within the USDA. We won't know, or who knows actually when the next report's going to be from them. But the Illinois numbers, especially Southern Illinois, I think for the most part have been coming in a lot lower than what had been expected a month and a half ago. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that reflects on a USDA's national average yield, if and when we get to see that again.
And Naomi Bloom, you did mention this up front in the things you wanted to talk about, saying grain is moving, demand is fantastic, particularly for corn. What are you thinking?
Yeah, here's what I liked about corn this week. So on Monday, USDA released their weekly export inspection report, and corn bookings for the week ending October 16th at 1.3 million metric tons, near the high end of the range, and in bushels, that's like 97 million above the seasonal pace that was needed to reach USDA's already huge, large target. So this is actually the second best week of corn export inspections since 1982. That's from DTN. So we have strong demand for product, even though we're not seeing what the weekly sales are. We are exporting product. And then also this week, we had our ethanol report, weekly ethanol report, and that jumped to 1,100 barrels a day and 327 million gallons for the week. So production was above expectations, a new marketing year high, 111 million bushels of corn used in the production process. So we have strong export demand. We have strong ethanol demand. And to Ted's point, you know, basis is strengthening in different parts of the country. If there's a lot of processing facilities there or near the river, if they need to get product down the river, we've seen basis levels at the Gulf stay stronger in general. So that's really exciting. And the other thing, it's not just the corn market, the wheat market. We had great weekly export inspections this week at 480,000 tons, up from 447,000 tons last week. And marketing year-to-date, wheat inspections are 20% higher than the same period last year. They're at 11.1 million tons versus 9.3 a year ago. So people are buying wheat. And I heard a rumor today, too. I saw it on the newswire that maybe China was buying wheat today. And to me, that makes sense. That's been really, really rainy in portions of China for the ending part of September and early October. And in general, just with this wrapping up corn harvest, they were worried about quality. So if China is maybe buying wheat, that's a way for them to secure feed. It's a way for them to not spook the market, because if it came out that China was buying corn, everybody would be really excited. So the demand for their, the demand for feed is fantastic, and the demand for U.S. grain is there.
And Ted Seifried, on the demand side, and we'll just stay with grains and oils seeds. China, as mentioned, may have been in the market for soybeans as well. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so there were some reports coming earlier today that China may have bought 1.26 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans. Nothing confirmed on that, but we have some contacts in China that said that actually really could be the case. The problem is we're not going to really know if and when, or we're not going to know if it's the case or not, I don't think. I mean, we don't have our daily flash sales. We don't have our weekly export sales figures. So it's going to be very difficult to actually lock that down until it actually shows up on an inspections report, which may be weeks from now, if at all. The thing is that there does seem to be a little bit of a window where China might need to fill some needs between where they have booked now, which is pretty much through the end of November. They just bought some more Argentinian cargo as the last week, until they get into the Brazilian first season soybeans, really starting in January. So that month of December is really a question mark. So that 1.26, I mean, that's probably right around the number, or maybe about half of what they might need for the month of December. It would potentially make sense. The timing of it, though, in front of a meeting with Chinese President Xi and U.S. President Trump 9 days from today does make you kind of wonder if they would want to do that before the meeting or after. But either way, you know, we're in that time frame, Todd, where we don't have any government reporting. So rumors like these are going to be very difficult to confirm or deny until again, we see export inspections. But that could be weeks from now.
Okay, so I want to ask each of you to talk about the clientele you've discussed their corn and soybean yields with, and if what you're hearing from them lines up with what you are hearing across the board. So, and the way I think about this sometimes is, if I don't hear anything, it's better than expected. And honestly, I've not heard much, but I don't talk to a lot of producers. I think you talk to them. I know you talk to many more than I do. So, Ellen Dearden, what have you heard from different parts of the country?
Well, most of my clientele is from central Illinois west. So what I'm hearing is from the guys that are done or nearly done is that both corn and bean yields are really good. And when we're talking really good, we're talking about record or near record all farm yields, even in central Illinois. As in areas where only half the crop is in, they're a little more suggestive that there were some real issues in their corn crop, and that's primarily from eastern Nebraska and western Iowa. But again, pretty decent bean yields.
Naomi Blum?
So my clients are telling me a different story. Usually every year, if I'm asking my customers, hey, what's going on with your harvest? They'll say, well, mine's okay, but if you go 20 miles down the road, it's not good. And if I hear that, I know things are fine. And I have not heard that once this year. What I am hearing from Iowa is that their yields, because of the southern rust, and they only sprayed once in a lot of cases, is that yields are 20 bushels below last year. I have one client in Northwest Iowa who sprayed three times and he's got his best yields ever, but that is only one. And then today I talked with a client in Northeast Nebraska who is just traditionally has no irrigation, but for him, he had his best yield ever because they actually had rain there this year. And then one client in Minnesota said that he was just average with corn, but for the most part, my clients range from Nebraska to Ohio, down into Oklahoma, and only three have said that they are pleased with their corn yields. Everyone else is disappointed. On the soybean side of things, though, I will say that most folks are saying that it's coming in average or as expected, and not a lot of issues there, except in portions of Ohio and portions of Indiana where it had gotten to be a little bit drier in August.
And Ted Seifer from Zahner Ag Hedge, what are your clients telling you?
Yeah, no, I think Ellen hit the nail on the head there. The earlier harvested and therefore probably the earlier planted corn, I think was coming in really very well because it largely avoided that dry August or kind of had moved past its key moisture sensitive timeframe. And also, maybe the disease pressures came in a little bit too late to have that much of an impact. But the corn that is getting harvested a bit later, there's a bit more concern about. And it is very spotty. And it's really depending on what we put down for inputs. And that can vary from one field to the next, even with the same producer. So I mean, the corn yields, I think, are really all over the map. It is very difficult to get a handle on the overall national average, I think, for corn. For soybeans, kind of the same thing. Again, those earlier harvested soybeans, I think did a little bit better because, again, that dry August certainly is a problem for soybeans. I mean, August is the month for soybean moisture needs. And I gotta say, I think from what I've heard from most of my guys, clients, and other guys that I talk to, I think we're a little bit disappointed in soybean yields as a whole. Especially my guys up in the Dakotas. Even the ones that were able to miss out on the frost event that happened in September, still they're still trying to figure out what it was, but their soybean yields had come in quite a bit below what their expectations were. They're wondering if it had to do with the Canadian wildfires and just lack of clean sunlight. But yeah, I worry a little bit about that bean yield. The question is it going to matter? Are we going to have the demand to fill out the other side of the balance sheet or not? But yeah, the beans, I think, may have come in a bit disappointing for a lot of guys.
Okay, so Ellen, I want to turn to you and demand from the river system, particularly for corn, because at this time of year, normally we would be moving a lot of soybeans. I don't think that's the case. And I'm wondering whether that makes a difference in the way you think about the demand and the basis changes in your part of the world, and whether producers should or should not be taking advantage of them, and what it might mean longer term for this marketing year.
Well, as long as the corn demand at the Gulf remains pretty strong, I think we'll see basis remain strong because ethanol demand is sure held together nicely. But this market too can hit into a rail market that goes to the southwest and then on to Mexico. So we're seeing demand from that sector of the market too in western part of Illinois. I think that demand will remain strong on corn all the way through the first of the year, maybe well into the spring. Bean demand is really going to be very dependent on Asia, but particularly China. So I'm not sure where that'll go.
A secondary question, because I usually, and because of where we are, think about the Mississippi, the Illinois, the Ohio, even the Missouri, moving corn to the ports in New Orleans. But if you get far enough to the west, parts of Minnesota, the Dakotas, corn can move out of the PNW, and I'm pretty certain that that's been the case going to some of the Asian nations. Do we think, and Naomi, I'm going to guess that you might have a handle on this, that has been a strong demand pull as well?
I am actually not totally sure. I know that the basis for the beans up in North Dakota continues to stay wider. It has narrowed in some portions because the processing facilities there and the new processing facilities are able to pick up some of the slack. But I haven't heard too much about corn basis. I would say that for most of my clients, when we chat about it, they've been saying it's a little bit no of a normal wide at harvest for their area. But now you've got me thinking, and I'm going to do some digging on that tomorrow for you, Todd.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you Tuesday during the closing market report about that. So, Ted Seipert, what do you think producers should consider at this time? And let's divide this, and each of you can give me some options on it, into I've got corn left. It's going to go across the scale, and I'll have a week to make a decision about what to do with it. Let's start there, and then with that they have on the farm, and if they leave it at the elevator and take the in charge, how do they handle those things? So, why don't you start with me, please, and we'll work our way around through everybody.
Yeah, I think for corn, you have to kind of look at this time frame and say, the lack of USDA reporting, the lack of WASDE reports, yield reports, export sales reports, things like that, I think is actually maybe beneficial for corn right now. For one, I think that 207 million bushels that we found on old crop ending stocks, surprisingly, has kind of gotten swept under the carpet at the moment, or just sort of out of sight, out of mind, because we have not seen that reflected on a USDA's balance sheet. The report's government shutdown happened before they were able to get a chance to do that. I think, yeah, while you could probably take something off of the national average yield for corn, it's still probably going to be pretty good, especially with the amount of acreage that we have. That production number's probably going to be very solid. So yes, we have good demand right now, but I think the production side is going to be a bit of a problem for corn. And when we start seeing these numbers again, that might be a big reminder. The other thing that I'm concerned about for corn is that South American crop. CONAB continues to raise their corn crop that they just harvested, and also raise their next crop that they're intending to plant here pretty soon. And that's a lot of competition in the world. And I'm worried that that competition from last year's corn crop is going to run into the window of our typical corn export season. I'm worried that a lot of our corn exports are a little bit front-loaded here, mainly because South America has been very focused on getting all the beans they can to China, that they have had difficulty going full bore on their corn exports. But that will kind of come along in that January through June timeframe, where we usually enjoy sort of almost an exclusive window for our exports. So I think you look at this as an opportunity for corn. For soybeans, I think it's a little bit of more difficult decision to make, because what happens 8, 9 days from now in that meeting? Is there going to be a big deal? Is China going to resume buying U.S. beans like normal? Problem is, we've missed a lot of that export window now. So in my mind, you're going to have to hear that China is committing to 10 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans here and now in order to start to catch us back up to where we would be for this time of year. And if that doesn't happen, you really have to worry that there's a lot of downside potential for soybeans, because just the demand side of the balance sheet's just going to be a problem, even if yields come down. So, the other hand of that is that if China does commit to, more beans and does start buying aggressively with lower yields, we could have a very tight balance sheet. So it's a very, very difficult thing to try to predict in beans. I think the best thing I would say, though, use this optimism that we have in the market leading up to that meeting, make some sales, and then we can look for re-ownership strategies in case we really do get some good business from China and we do go sharply higher. But I think the big strength in soybeans is here now, and up until that meeting happens, I'm worried that the market's going to be disappointed with whatever comes out of that meeting.
So, Ellen Dearden, Ted's saying there's an opportunity for both corn and soybeans at the moment. What kind of view do you have at the marketplace?
Well, I think the big problem that I see on corn is a 24 cent in charge to pay for commercial storage till the first of the year. That's just too large for me to be dealing with. I would much prefer to turn corn into cash on at least the overrun that you can't store at home. And yeah, then you can look at a re-ownership strategy in either March or May options. The bean side of things, I think there is a little more upside potential. However, I'm going to really be waiting to see the Treasury Secretary's comments after his meeting this week, because if his meeting is not fruitful with the Chinese, then whatever Trump says with Xi, or if that meeting even takes place, will be old news. So I think you got to wait until the first of the week to price out beans.
And Naomi Bloom, any thoughts for us?
Absolutely. If you're making any cash sales here at harvest for whatever reason, do consider reowning it. Corn and beans both. I feel that the prices come Christmas time and into the new year are going to be better than what they are right now. There's an upside down head and shoulders formation on the March corn contract, which points to a swing objective higher, closer to 475 to 480 if we can get some additional supportive news. to get the market to go higher, or if the funds continue to buy back the short positions. Now, I do think that the 475 to 480 area in March corn might be as good as it gets. For prices to get higher than that, you're going to need to see new demand coming in for export sales. You're going to need to see bad weather happening in South America, and you're going to need to see a bigger reaction of the funds to be buyers. So in general, if we get to that 475 area, should that come to fruition come Christmas or come January, that is going to be a point where if folks have corn in the bins, that's where you're going to want to be making some more cash sales at that price level. Same concept on the soybeans, looking at re-ownership bull call spreads with the March contract. That March soybean contract has been trading in a sideways consolidation pattern for about a year and a half. And the longer the market trades in a sideways pattern, the bigger the price breakout is going to be down the road. So there could be some upside there if China comes in and does some buying here. But of course, if they don't come in, as Ted's point was earlier, the market might have a hard time getting through the short-term resistance area that we're at right now. So to reward the rally, especially on beans, since we are up about 50 cents off the recent lows, make some sales, re-own it with a fixed risk strategy just in case the market can go higher. But in general, I'm a little bit more optimistic with these prices.
And finally, I'd like to turn our attention to policy coming out of Washington, D.C. President Trump this month has been working to salvage the Argentine economy. The first thing that happened, of course, was the announcement of a $20 billion investment to support the Argentine peso. That turned out to be $40 billion at this point. And at the same time, Argentina then took off the tax, something above 30%. I think it's 33.5% or 35% on soybeans. And in 4 or 5 days, they sold about 40 cargo loads of soybeans into the marketplace that did not make American crop row agriculture very happy. And then on Sunday of this week, the president suggested and said that they were going to import Argentine beef into the United States to try to lower consumer beef prices. An announcement eventually came that they're hoping to bring in 4 times the quota that has been in place for beef coming into the United States. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association has not been happy. In fact, their press release says cattlemen and women cannot stand behind President Trump while he undercuts the future of family farmers and ranchers by importing Argentinian beef. It is imperative that POTUS and Secretary Rollins let the cattle markets work without interference. How has the market in Chicago reacted to all of this? And I suppose I'll start, Ellen Dearden, with you.
You're starting with me just because we're cattle people, aren't you?
I am.
I to tell you the truth, 20,000 metric tons to 80,000 metric tons is not that big a deal. But I think the signal from the White House that I'm going to beat my chest and look how good of guy I am that we've got the consumer price for beef gonna head lower is a kind of a kick in the gut. And I think that Colin Woodall is really good about saying that it does undermine the family rancher, family farmer, and the market reaction was really difficult yesterday when we saw a limit down move in the feeder cattle. The live cattle have been able to find support on the nearby months, but when we go back a little further, because that's when we expect imports to start, not so good. So I'm not in favor of this action. I think this is intervention that doesn't need to be intervened on. But I'm just, one small little cattle lady out here in the country.
Colin Woodall is the Chief Executive Officer of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He and the President of the Beef Association have not been kind in the words there have been expressed as it's related to this Argentine beef import row that is taking place. Naomi Bloom, what kinds of comments do you have for me today on this issue, if anything?
Yeah, well, I mean, a few weeks ago, President Trump had kind of gave his first warning shot, saying he was aware of high prices to the consumer. And then last week, sure, him talking about importing Argentina beef. I mean, to Alan's point, the 80,000 metric tons isn't a huge a lot. A huge amount. And I had reported to my clients earlier in the week that from January through July of 2025, our US beef imports were closer to 1.2 million tons, and that's up nearly 30% on the year. So our imports in general from Brazil, Australia, Uruguay, and Argentina were already up. It was just, I think, that the market picked up specifically on this Argentina news because it was a concrete number that came out of the White House. But when you look at a monthly chart on cattle, when you look at where prices have been recently, we hit a huge technical objective on a monthly chart with the recent price highs that we've had. And so some profit taking was is, I think bound to happen. Also, cattle producers and farmers, you are savvy. There are marketing tools that are available to help for prices going lower, just keeping the politics out of it. Use your marketing tools to help protect the value. I mean, we've been talking for a year how the cattle prices have been going higher, and at some point it's going to fall. And so it's maybe going to be now the high coming in because of what came out of the White House, the different capacities with that multi-point plan that they released yesterday as well, that they're going to try to ultimately bring prices down. And as we all know, it's a little bit different to bring the beef herd a lot of growth just because of gestation cycles. It's a lot different than eggs when President Trump said he was going to bring the price of eggs down. But I think this is maybe something that we all thought eventually would come. We just didn't know it would come with this variety of news events swirling around it.
And Ted Seifert.
Yeah, to agree with both Naomi and Ellen, 80,000 metric tons up from 20,000 metric tons is really not much. In fact, it's what, 3 days of consumption? In a year where, to Naomi's point, we're already up, what, 27, almost 30% in our imports. And that's not interference into markets necessarily. That's how markets work, right? If domestic prices are high, and we can look at other markets that we can buy beef from, Australia in particular. Brazil's got the tariff on them right now. We're going to do that, right? So I don't know. This is just more of a function of that. It's the whole point. It's the news that it's getting, the attention that Trump is giving to it. That's what we don't really love, right? And the idea that there could be more things to come to do this, and that's what the market doesn't like. That's what cattle ranchers don't like to hear. But being honest, I mean, talking to my cattle guys, I mean, for months now, they've been saying, I don't know why we're so high. Like, I really want to get more involved in hedge strategies right now, but this is a runaway train, and I don't want to be margining this. And puts are so very expensive. So I think, the strength that we've seen in the cattle market, look, we like the prices when we sell our animals, but we have a problem, I think, with, how to manage risk in these markets. And so maybe this is bringing us into a time frame where that becomes a little bit easier. And again, the Argentinian thing in and of itself is not going to make or break our beef market, our cattle industry, anything like that. It's the point of it and the public the news publications and the attention that it's getting. In the meantime, I think the bigger announcement here today was that the Mexican Ag Minister will travel to Washington next week to talk to Claudia Steinbaum about reopening the border with Mexico. That is a much, much bigger deal if that happens. I mean, there's a whole lot of animals that are backed up in Mexico that would be coming over the border to start to replenish our herd. And that would be the thing that ultimately would probably put the highs in for the cattle complex as a whole. Maybe not right away. It takes some time. But that's the one that I think poses a bigger threat to U.S. beef prices. So I don't know. It's been a long-term bull market. Bull markets have a tendency to ultimately fix themselves. I guess the cliche is, high prices are the cure for high prices. That's not been allowed to fix itself, mainly because of the border being closed with Mexico, and to some degree the tariffs on Brazil. But if those things start to change, especially the border thing, that will start to, again, maybe fix the high prices.
And Ellen Dearden, I'll close out the program and this part of the conversation coming back to you. There is an 8 to 10 year cycle in cattle, and it appears we should be at the top of that cycle and it should be about to turn. I know you watch these kinds of things. Where do you suppose we are in it?
We are at the top. We are at the top, and I was expecting to see it in the summer, and then work lower. Even on the short term, I thought we ought to be working lower in cattle here into October, November, December. So I think the big top's in.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Online on demand at willag.org, where you can hear this program in its entire team. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Ellen Dearden from Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. Naomi Bloom of TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And Ted Seifert with Zahner Ag Hedge. He is in Chicago. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.